be seated. Good afternoon. We're delighted to welcome with us for this afternoon's oral argument, Lakeland Union High School. Will they please stand? The students stand.
Oh, that's wonderful.
You may be seated. Frank Keeler. You may stand, even if you're not a student. Is he here? Hi. And you have attended the 2005 Teachers Institute, and thank you for coming to that. That's what I have down here, did you? Good. All right.
We want to know, did you pass?
Flying colors, I remember you well. The students are here with a national award-winning program sponsored by the State Bar and this court. And the program consists of our inviting students to come to the oral argument. If they agree to come, they may do outside activities about the case, and they get copies of the brief of the case we're about to hear. In addition to that, at the lunch hour, they meet with a justice, and I'm told that you met this noon with Justice Wilcox, who discussed with you the procedures for hearing and deciding this case. For these cases, the substantive issues involved are not discussed by the justice. Let me introduce all of the court to you. Starting on my far left is Justice Lewis Butler. Seated next to Justice Butler is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox, whom you've already met. To his right is Justice Patrick Crooks, and on the far right is Justice Patience Robinson. With those introductions made, I'll call the last case for today, 05AP1730, Thomas Avery versus Drew Diedrich. Representing the Averys is Daniel S. Davis. Counsel?
May it please the court, good afternoon. I'm Dan Davis. To my right is Attorney Leah Michelson-Link, and we represent the petitioners in this matter.
Counsel, I should advise you, if you don't know, you should take great care because the trial judge is here. Judge English, would you stand and be recognized? Thank you for coming.
And I most certainly agreed with the trial judge's ruling in this matter.
I knew you could be persuaded.
I'm not the one I think that needs to take break.
You're putting the burden on us now.
The central issue in this case, based on the undisputed facts that we've got here, the core question is, does an insurance agent who's agreed to act as the agent on a particular property for a particular insured principal on an ongoing basis have a duty to procure a requested increase in coverage on that property, or essentially is the agent allowed to disobey the instructions of its insured principal? And I think long-standing agency principal law, along with Wisconsin case law dealing specifically with insurance agents, guides us and tells us, yes, the agent has a duty to procure the requested increase in coverage, and if the agent fails to do so, can be held responsible in tort for any damages to the suit.
Counsel, I've read Chinese food and other cases. It seems to me that you may be correct, but there's one thing that's missing here, that there was no agreement. In other words, as I looked through the depositions, what I found was that A said to B, I'd like to insure it for $250,000. B, which is the Dietrich agency, said, no, it's $150,000. That's what it's been. But if you get someone, like a contractor, to tell me, then it will be $250,000. Sent a letter to that effect. And in the deposition, I started to say that was the understanding. How can it be how, I don't mean A and B, but how can it be true that then there, even in the light of a understanding, which is 150, that the 250 would prevail?
Okay. First of all, I agree that there needs to be an agreement to have an agency relationship. But the agreement here occurred initially when the property was inherited. The Dietrich Agency made an agreement to act as agent for that property on an ongoing basis.
But to put any, in other words, it seems untoward to me that if I want to insure, and I am the person that would be asking for the insurance, that if I say 250, or what if I said 450,000, under your interpretation, it's whatever I want. And and you're saying nobody can say you don't have it until the company themselves says, no, that's too much, it's not worth that. In other words, that agency relationship seems to be one-sided. In other words, the agent always has to do what the principal says?
If they want the agency to continue, yes, they do. You have to follow the instructions of your principal insured if you want that agency relationship to continue. Certainly,
didn't the agent here say, I'm not doing it?
The agent said, I don't think it's worth that much. Go prove to me that it is, and then I'll do it.
Yeah. In other words, until you prove it to me, it stays at 150.
Correct.
Did your client fire the agent?
My client did not fire the agent. Continued to do business with them.
Okay.
But I submit, Your Honor, that if the agent is going to refuse to provide the requested increase in coverage, then the agent needs to withdraw the agency relationship, indicate to them specifically, to the insured specifically, I won't do it. If you truly believe it's worth that much, you need to find an agent who will.
Where is that law? Where do you find that law?
It's standard basic agency principal relationship. In other words, there's an agreement to act in an agency.
Well, the agreement is this is an insurance agent to put coverage. They had 150. The Averys inherited it. That what was on it. And they had a relationship, just like everybody, I'm sure, has a relationship with a certain insurance agent. But you leave that agency, your clients could have said, well, if you won't do it, we'll go some other place. But you're saying that it's a one-sided track, and it seems to me that when I look at, and this is cited by your opponent, other jurisdictions as well as Wisconsin seem to say that you have to have some input. Your input, your client's input, was to bring in something from a contractor for another 100,000. That's what he was asked to do.
Yes.
And you're saying once you request it, it's automatic. That seems to be a very one-sided relationship.
Well, it's not a one-sided relationship. It's an agency relationship, agency-principal relationship. If you look at the Nelson line of cases in Meyer, this court and the Court of Appeals have outlined a division of the duties between an insured and an agent. Specifically, an agent doesn't have any kind of a duty to advise. The onus is on the insured to determine the amount that they want in insurance and to specifically request it. And if you look at those cases, and I'm specifically talking about Nelson, Meyer, Lenz, and Lisa's Style Shop, those are all cases that deal specifically with a situation where there was underinsurance, and the court said, tough luck, Mr. Insured, you never requested an increase. It's your job to request an increase. You have the duty to do that, and if you don't do that, the agent doesn't have any duty there. So what the courts have said, the insured is in the best position to know his financial situation and insurance needs. It's the insured's duty to make the request. Those cases go on to say once the request is made, now it's the agent's duty to honor those requests and send it up and procure the insurance.
Mr. Davis, at the time of the request for the increased coverage, my question is two-part. At the time of the request, was there in place an agency-principal relationship between the Averys and the agent? And if there was such a relationship, did the insurance agent's indication that he was not going to provide or at least procure additional coverage, did that refusal act as a termination of that relationship?
To answer the first part of your question, an agency relationship did exist. This is an ongoing relationship. The deposition testimony kind of outlined that the agency provided insurance for a lot of different properties, including the property in question here. The agency was available to discuss by telephone with the Averys the ins and outs of their coverages. If claims were to be made, the agency was contacted. If there were changes in coverage, the agency was contacted. If there were additional properties purchased, the agency was contacted. If a property was sold and there no longer needed to be insurance, the agency was contacted. This was an ongoing relationship. I asked Mr. Dietrich at his deposition how, and I'll quote it here, what do you consider your role and how would you describe your role in dealing with the Averys? What do you do for them? And on this particular day of his deposition, he said, I am their insurance agent. When they ask me to find, when they purchase a property, I do my best to find the appropriate company for them and then put the appropriate coverages together for them. Who determines the appropriate, what the appropriate coverages are? Answer, generally the insured. So I guess what I'm saying is this is an ongoing relationship. This isn't a piecemeal situation where the Averys call and say, we need coverage for this property, and as soon as the agent purchases the coverages, it's over and there's no further duty, because there are ongoing situations where calls are made, claims are transmitted.
Then what about the act of the refusal? Because at the point when there was additional coverage requested, the agent obviously didn't go and procure that coverage, said, as I understand it, go and get me some proof and, you know, before we take the next step. So the additional coverage was not purchased. So did the act of not going forward, did that in and of itself terminate the relationship, or what impact did that have on the relationship?
It didn't, only because, and what I submit to the court is that if Dietrich was going to refuse this request, he needed to specifically notify them that he was no longer going to be their agent on this property. But that's not what he did.
Did he have to notify them, or did they have a duty to fire him? I'm not quite sure how it works.
I submit to the court that the agent has the duty, if he's not going to follow the request of the insured, to say, I'm no longer your agent. If you believe this property is truly worth $250,000, I advise you to go find an agent as soon as possible who will put it in place for you, because I'm not going to.
Oh.
And
go ahead.
Furthermore, because he did keep in place the $150,000 after this meeting, so he was continuing to act as the agent. The agency relationship never ended. He simply refused the request. And in order to properly refuse that request, I believe, and I think that the law supports it, he needed to end the agency relationship for that property and let them know that he wasn't going to do it. And instead, what he did is he said, well, I don't think it's worth that much, but if you go out and prove it to me, I'll send it up. And there's absolutely no legal support for putting the burden back onto the insured to prove what the property is worth.
Counsel, don't you look at the relationship. You're talking about this relationship. I'm referring to appellate page 163. This is a deposition with the Averys. The question is, and you knew that Dietrich was not going to, in the future, increase absent hearing back from you. The answer is, this is Mrs. Avery, correct. And I won't, and I'll just skip down to, this is on page 47. You understood that Drew Dietrich, according to your theory, wasn't doing anything until you heard back from him, from you, correct. Answer, I felt I had no choice, this is your client, other than change insurance companies. So it's correct that you did not expect Drew Dietrich to do anything with respect to the Orchard property until you got back to him, correct? Again, had I known it was an option for him to request the additional coverage, I would have asked him to do that. So, but the understanding, as I get from this, is there was this relationship, there was a principal agency relationship, but your clients themselves knew he wasn't going to increase this, and according to the deposition, they felt, I felt I had no choice other than to change insurance companies. Now, does that change the scenario, or you're saying, no, that duty is the same whether they knew it or not?
The duty is the same whether they knew it or not. They felt they had no choice other than to go out and do what their insurance agent is telling them they have to do or to switch companies. We're talking about people who own a lot of properties who have been with this agent for a long, long time. And to simply expect them to carry this burden of either proving to their agent what it's worth or finding another agent without the agent specifically telling them that I'm not doing it, you need to find somebody who will, I think shifts the burden, more burden onto the insured, where the insured already has this burden of they're the ones that are supposed to request it. Now they go and request it. They do exactly what this court and other courts have said is your duty. You need to request what you think you need. They do that, and then the agent turns around and says, forget it, go prove to me first, and then maybe I'll do it. And I don't think the agent has the authority to do that.
Didn't the agent go out and survey the property and look at it himself? He just didn't pull $150,000 out of the hat, did he?
He did inspect the property. The $150,000 comes from what it was insured at before it was
there. I understand that from the briefs, but unless I misread the facts, and that's certainly possible, I thought that he himself determined independently that it was not worth any more than that.
He did so erroneously, yes.
Well, it may be erroneous. I mean, that's a different question, I think, than the one you're presenting us with, which is, you know, he has to provide the insurance that's requested regardless of what he thinks the value of the property is.
As long as he wants to continue that relationship, the agency relationship. If he doesn't want to do what his insured principal wants him to do, then he needs to withdraw from the relationship.
You think he has to terminate all the policies and terminate all the coverages that he's provided on all the policies? I mean, the policies are really with the company and not with the agent.
No,
well, how would he do that? Tell me how he would do that in your view.
He would sit at that meeting and say, with regard to this particular property, I'm not going to do what you ask.
Okay? He did say that. That's what he told him.
Okay, and then I submit to you that he needs to say, you either need to agree with me, Mr. Insured, Mr. Avery, you need to agree with me that it's only worth $150,000 so that I know we've got an agreement as to what the current coverage should be, or I'm going to withdraw as your agent on this property, and you need to find an agent who will do what you want.
Did they pay him on a premium for $150,000? On the property?
Yes. The premiums.
Who paid him? Who pays the insurance agent? Did your client pay the insurance agents over and above the premium?
No, just the premium.
The insurance company paid the agent.
There's a commission.
Right.
On
and
the premium.
So the agent is both an agent for the insurance company and your client?
Yes.
It's a dual agent?
Yes.
So he has responsibilities to the company not to overinsure. That is excess coverage.
Well, if you look at the procedures within the Dedrick agency, they submit it up, and if the company doesn't want to do it, the company won't do it. And it's the company's responsibility, if they think it's too high, to send out some appraiser and to go check it out.
They didn't do it this time that way. He refused to cover it for $250,000.
Right.
Now, why do you think it has to be an all-or-nothing agency? According to the jury instructions, which I think is indicative of the law, an agency is created as the result of the conduct of two parties. So you have to say the principal, I want you to be my agent. The agent says, I want to be your agent. And each one of them can limit. So why didn't the Dedrick, in effect, say today to Avery, I am your agent to get coverage for you for this property, but only to the extent of $150,000. That's the limit of what I am willing to be your agent for. And by not going elsewhere and by buying this policy, didn't your client agree that that was the agency deal? That he made an offer, the other guy counter-offered, your client accepted.
But my clients never accepted. They felt they had no choice. They left that meeting saying we somehow need to prove to him that what we think the value is correct.
Did they get a policy for $150,000
in
hand? They did.
Well, it was in place, and it continued on in place.
And, in fact, the premium was paid or would have been paid timely.
Yes.
All right.
Didn't they understand, and this is what I think picking up on the Chief Justice's question, that at the time when they left Dedrick, they had $150,000. And according to the deposition, that it was, they were going to go out and get a contractor. In fact, they did contact him, but they failed to get back to the Dietrich agency. Is that what happened?
Well, the appraiser hadn't put anything in writing yet. They were waiting for the appraiser to put something in writing.
He was a contractor who was familiar with building, and they left Dietrich with the impression, if I'm not mistaken, that someone would, he said, until someone gets back to me, it's going to be $150. Is that, am I wrong?
That was what Dietrich dictated. Correct.
But that's what your clients testified to in the deposition.
That everybody left that meeting knowing that it was still $150.
Yes.
They weren't happy about it. They felt they had no choice but to do what their agent said.
And what they had to do was get this appraiser or contractor to say it was worth $250, and then I understood, from what I understood, that Dietrich would have then, if someone would have verified that, put the $250 on. So there was a contingency left open when they walked out of the office.
Correct. And I submit to you that that burden should not have existed, and once the request was made, it's the agent's duty to submit it up, no questions asked.
Doesn't that run counter to the language in the Appleton Chinese food case that talks about the duty of the insurance agent and talks about the duty involving obtaining the agreed-to coverage? Now, the agreed-to coverage here, if I'm following correctly your responses to several of my colleagues, appears to be $150 until the Avery submitted proof that it was more than $150. So how do you get around the language of Appleton Chinese Foods?
There, I submit to you there was no agreed-upon coverage after that meeting. The Averys did not agree to $150 in coverage. They wanted $250. The agent would only do $150. At that point, the agency is putting coverage in place that was not agreed to by his principal. And that's why I submit that he needed to specifically convince them to agree to the $150 before they left that meeting or withdraw as their agent and tell them they need to go find somebody else who will do the $250.
And they had no responsibility at all in that regard? It's up to the agent to say, too bad, so sad, I'm gone?
Yes, it is. It's the agent has the burden of following the instructions of the principal. If he doesn't want to follow the instructions of the principal, he ends the relationship.
What case can you give us that says the duty is solely that of the agent to announce that he's withdrawing from the agency?
There is no specific case on point to that. There is a case that says if he was unable to get the insurance, he needed to notify the insureds immediately. And I think logic follows that if he's unwilling to get that insurance, he needs to notify them immediately so they can find appropriate coverage.
Didn't he send them a letter?
He sent them a letter saying the same thing he said at the meeting. If you provide me proof, I'll send it up. Nothing about, I equate this to, in some respects, an attorney-client relationship, not with regard to advising, but with regard to carrying out instructions. If I, as an attorney, am unwilling to, for example, sue a certain defendant that my client wants me to sue, I need to either tell my client, I'm not going to do that, and if you persist with this course of action, I will have to withdraw, or get my client to agree that that course of action is not the right course of action. And I submit to you that an insurance agent's relationship, it's an agency principal relationship, is the same. If the agent is unwilling to follow the course of action specifically requested by his principal insured, he needs to either convince them that he's right and that the $150 is the proper amount, or he needs to tell them, you need to find another agent who is going to do this for you, and you need to do it fast. Just like I would tell this potential client, you need to find somebody else to do it. There are strict deadlines in filing matters. Go find another lawyer who will do it.
How about if you say to your client, okay, I'll take your personal injury case. It's a small case, but I'll take it if you can, only if you can get your treating doctor to give me a positive medical report. I mean, isn't that somewhat analogous to what we have here?
I would equate it more to saying, you go do your own investigation and convince me that this is a legitimate case. Go do my work for me, and then I'll take your case. And if I am not representing them and I tell them to go ahead and do that, fine. But if I'm representing them, it's my responsibility as the attorney to to do the investigation, to make a legal determination as to whether it goes forward or not. And either my client agrees with me or I withdraw from the case.
I would think the relationship that Justice Bradley related to the attorney situation would be akin to this situation. There was something left to be done. There was not a termination. You're saying that Dietrich had to terminate. Well, Dietrich did not know, as far as that I can see, that he was going to not be their agent. He thought, or at least what I read in here, that they're insured for $150, and if they bring in this appraisal, that it would be $250. So why wasn't there a continuing relationship relying on something to be done? I think that's what Justice Bradley is referring to. Well, something had to be done here, because then it would have continued, just like in the attorney-client relationship.
And my point is that the agent had a duty to send it up without something further being done. It's not, the agent doesn't have authority to put the onus back on the principal insured to go get him proof. If they're making the request, the insurance agent has to send the request up if he wants to continue that relationship.
So if I exaggerate, I use $450. So they want $1 million insurance right then and there. You're saying that Dietrich agency had to put that on, and maybe later it would be rejected by the company. Is that right?
Yes, or convince the insured that they're way off base here and that they need to agree with him that $150 is plenty. And that didn't happen here. They didn't leave that meeting agreeing that $150 was the right amount of insurance.
So your position is, at the moment the insured said $250, the duty was to send it up to the insurance company. It was a violation of the duty at that very moment. Regardless what happened thereafter, there was a violation of that duty, and the risk of loss fell to the agent, not the insured.
Correct, for not carrying out the reasonable instructions of the insured.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the agent said, I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it, as long as that agency relationship wasn't terminated at that point, then the duty still remained with the agent and he can't slough it off. That's, in effect, your position, if I understand.
Yes, the agent here tried to have the best of both worlds. I'm not going to do what you say, but I'm going to continue to collect the commissions on the premiums for an amount of insurance that you don't want. That's a violation of his duties.
Thank you, Counsel. Justice Brasso.
Am I correct that Mr. Dietrich visited and inspected the property at one point?
Correct.
What was the function of that?
I believe to make a determination, at least roughly, as to what the value of the house was, the property, and because they were putting an amount in that had been, they simply got that number from what it was previously insured for. So Dietrich testified that any time he has a new property, he goes out and takes a look at it. He's got a formula he uses to determine what the value is. It's a very rough calculation. It is by no means controlling as an appraisal. And his figures, the way their calculations came out, he came out to $150.
Well, if you came to me and said, I want so much coverage for my property, would I have the right to say, well, I'll need to inspect the property before I agree to that?
No. As the agent, you're saying?
Yeah.
No, and in this case, this inspection occurred after the insurance was put into place.
I would have no right to inspect the property before acting on your request?
That's not the function of the agent. The function of the agent is to receive a request and submit it up, and if the insurance company has questions about the value of the property, they will send out appraisers and have somebody take a look at it. I mean, Wisconsin law has eliminated there's no duty to evaluate, there's no duty to recommend on the part of an agent. An agent is simply take a request and send it up. And that's what he didn't do here.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Attorney Mark Nelson, representing the Diedrichs.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. My name is Mark Nelson. I am one of the attorneys representing the defendants in this case. With me is Heather Lutzke. She's been helping me out quite a bit on this case. About 26 years ago, I stood here and was sworn into the State Bar of Wisconsin. Seems like a long time ago, but I haven't been back in front of you since then, so this is my first time. It's an honor to be here. It's good to be back, and I thank you and appreciate the opportunity to make some comments on behalf of my clients. It was our firm who started all of this journey all the way up to you folks with filing a motion for summary judgment on a very legal issue and a very narrow issue on the question of duty. In order to get to that point, we put together a structure and a framework of facts that we believe called into question the legal duty of an insurance agent. As you know, under the jury instruction, there is basically two categories of what an insurance agent is to do. The one is, in these cases, it's tough to talk about it, but it's sort of like what an insurance agent does absent a special relationship. And then the other category is when there's a special relationship.
Now, the trial court made findings of fact, and then the conclusion of law is that there was no special relationship. And neither one of you has challenged that, if I understand the briefs.
That's correct, Your Honor. Nobody challenged that. We were pleased with that finding. And so the question before you is on that first little issue of what is the normal duty of an insurance agent. And that's why we're here today. The legal framework is, we believe, set out quite clearly in all of the cases that have been cited to you, and there's a body of them that both of us are relying upon, and the primary one, we believe, is Appleton Chinese that sets the tone for this. Let me just address a few of the factual issues because I want to get that as a backdrop. This property was insured by a completely different company and agent in early 2002 when the plaintiffs, Mrs. Avery, inherited this property, called up our client and said, I've got this new property, I'd like to have you insure it. And at that time, the property was already insured for $150,000. It is that time when my client went out and inspected the premises and did a typical evaluation that insurance agents do, and there's no allegation that that was done in a negligent fashion.
Mr. Nelson, when Mrs. Avery placed that call to start the process for that evaluation, was the agent already representing the Averys on other properties?
Our agency was, yes. The Averys have several properties and businesses that we represented and had obtained insurance for them for those other properties. We were not involved in this property before.
So as I understand it, there was an ongoing relationship between the agent and the Averys generally, but this was the initiation of the agency for this property?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And then in mid-July, just a couple months later, let me back up. That policy was in place. And I think we need to consider that policy to be a product. The product was obtained through my insurance agency. My insurance agency is not the insurance company. That policy is in place, and it's going to continue in place, and was done properly according to the request that was made in early 2002. Then in July, they had the famous meeting where we get together and we deal with all of our policies, and it's sort of like it's probably PR, it's probably client service, it's everything wrapped together to try to just address some questions that they might have. And it is at that meeting where the issue of should we raise it by $100,000 or not came into play. And Your Honors are correct. My client refused that. There was no reliance after that meeting upon my client to raise the policy limits because there was a flat rejection of doing that.
Who was he representing? Who was your client representing when he refused to send up an increased amount?
And that's a good question, because there is a dual agency here. There's no question about that.
Who is he representing?
Well, I believe he had a duty to both companies.
Right.
Yes. And I believe that he was, what he said was, I don't believe that it's warranted to put this up.
He's representing the insurance company.
I believe that he had a dual agency, and there's no question that he was an agent of the insureds at that time.
So when he says, I won't insure it for $250, I won't send it up, because, I mean, he's saying that might be a fraud on the insurance company because the property isn't worth that.
But that puts both parties at risk. He's acting on behalf of both parties. The property ought to be protected. And to send up an application that might not be accepted is a problem for both sides.
And if the guy is going to pay premiums for $250, but the replacement value really isn't $250, that he's overpaying.
He's overpaying. And quite frankly, it's my client's economic benefit to increase the product by $100,000, but he's choosing not to do that.
My question is twofold. One, opposing counsel indicated, and maybe my experience is different, and I just that the agent not only has no duty, but should not come out and inspect the property. I hope I didn't misstate it, but he said that once the request is made, that it would be automatic. At least my experience has been where you want an increase or you want insurance, the agent generally comes out, takes pictures, whatever else, measures. Is that standard in the industry or not?
I believe there are duties that insurance agents have that absent a special relationship, and that they do not just phone in the applications, that an insurance agent can't simply say, do this for me or else. I believe we have insurance companies all over the state who are providing more services than just this.
It was mentioned that the agent went out there. You mentioned it, and so did opposing counsel, and he measured using a standard book that was referred to by Justice Rogensack.
That's correct.
And he determined after first of all, 150 was on it. Then he went out and looked at it, and he said 150 is, and he made a judgment call, even though he was being asked to put 250 on.
No. The evaluation was before the 250.
Sure. But then he was asked to put 250. But he observed it himself.
Did not go out a second time.
No. I mean, he went out the first. He had seen it, and then they had the annual. You call it the PR meeting or whatever. But here's the other question: if he had not insured this, he had this agency relationship with them on other properties. The duty that's talked about by opposing counsel, would that be I have to withdraw as agent in all policies or just this one? That seems to be somewhat confusing, because if you withdraw as agent on this one, would he still be the agent for the Averys on the other property? Or maybe they would just say, no, we don't want to do business with somebody who won't honor our requests.
Right. The agency relationship is in their control as much as it is in our control. And if I believe we had 9 different properties, and this would have been the 10th one, it's unclear to me if they're suggesting that we need to get rid of all of the business or just the one. Certainly the agency jury instruction talks about an undertaking as compared to the entire relationship. So it very well could be that as to this item is what the plaintiff's counsel's position is, and that is that as to this particular policy that we had to stop it. But I think what's important here is they realize there needs to be an agreement in the agency relationship. And the first agreement the agreement they want to focus on is the agreement that took place in early 2002 when we placed $150,000 on the property. I think the agreement that we should focus on is the agreement that took place during the July 2002 meeting. And it was during that meeting when it was said by Mr. Dietrich, we are refusing to put on that additional $100,000. At that juncture, they had the right to say, well, we're going to move on then. We're not going to do this. We disagree with you. Instead, there was an agreement put into place at that point in time on how to go forward. And that is, I believe, you know, an example of how we live in our life. People come to the table, not all the time in complete agreement, and we sit down, we chat about things, we disagree, and in the end we can either agree to disagree, we can agree, or we can reach an agreement to try to go forward and see if there's something that can be done to salvage this relationship. And what happened here was there was an agreement to go forward. Insurance is a product that lasts a long time. It's everywhere. This building is insured. All of us are insured. I didn't look up to see how many insurance agencies there are in Fond du Lac, but I suspect in Fond du Lac County, but I suspect there's many of them. These clients did have options. If they disagreed totally with my clients and decided we need to insure that for $250,000, it's their duty not only to know their business and their needs and to make a request, but it's also, I believe, their duty to find somebody who will honor that request. And they didn't do that in this case. Instead, they made a different agreement to let's proceed and see what happens.
Mr. Nelson, what was the agreement that you think they reached in July?
In July, the stipulated agreement, if you will, is that my client was not going to raise the policy limits $100,000, and it was up to the Averys to go out to try to see if they could justify the $100,000. There wasn't an agreement that if you come back with $100,000, we'll raise it. It wasn't that far-fetched. It was, I believe it was by them, we're going to go out and get the contract to determine whether or not it's worth $100,000 more. And then assuming that that happened, then they were going to bring it back and then see what happens from that standpoint.
You're focusing on the idea that the agreement was that the Averys had something to do, that the agent Diedrich, based on what they came back to him with, would then proceed from there.
Proceed from there and determine, for instance, look to see who the, I'm just speculating now, but what if the estimate came in from Mr. Avery for another $100,000? Mr. Diedrich at that point in time may have said, that doesn't cross over the bar. I don't think that's right. The agency relationship here is important, but I think what's equally important is that the policies continue. How do you withdraw in July without damaging the rights of the Averys with respect to that policy? Mr. Diedrich he's not going to cancel that policy. The policy is issued by an insurance company. It's in place. If they have a disagreement such that if the plaintiffs are correct, we are to terminate that relationship that day with respect to that policy, how is that done? That would be to the detriment of the Averys to say, fine, I'm going to put in today a cancellation for that insurance policy, go elsewhere. That doesn't help the Averys at all. What I believe the justices are asking about is whether or not it's an all or nothing, that it's got to go. And that's really what they're asking. When an insurance agent comes to the table, they don't just do what is told to them by their insurance clients. They have duties. The first paragraph that I referred to in the jury instruction talks about some duties. There's normal, customary things that our law has said that insurance agents are allowed to do without having a special relationship. They bring those duties to the table. The plaintiffs bring their duties to the table.
What are the duties of the agent?
The duties of the agent are to act, I believe, in a non-negligent fashion. They are allowed, I believe, I can give an example. It's kind of hard to say because of the special relationship issue, but one of the cases says that...
Well, there wasn't a special relationship.
There was not.
Just generally.
It's okay for an insurance agent to recommend coverage based on individual assessment of a client's needs and to periodically review those needs. And that's coming from the Meyer case.
Is that a duty?
I believe they have the responsibility to do that, yes. And whatever those responsibilities are as an insurance agent, absent a special relationship, what I hear them saying is that the moment you reject a request that's made by the Averys, then all of those duties that an insurance agent have are out the window. We don't do them anymore because you have the duty to do this, and that is to listen to me or else. Justice.
Do the agent's duties vary depending on the kind of insurance that's involved?
I suspect it does. For instance, in this case, there was a property. At some point in time, Mr. Diedrich felt it was his responsibility to go out and to do this rough calculation that is accepted in the industry to make sure that it's correct.
It would seem to me if you were my agent, and let's say I had an automobile insurance policy with limits of $500,000, I called you up and said, I would like to double my coverage or triple my coverage. It would seem to me that there's not a whole lot that you would have to quibble about if I wanted to do that. But if I had a $500,000 life insurance policy and I suddenly said, I think I would like a $5 million life insurance policy, you might say, maybe we'd better check out your health.
I believe that's correct, Justice, and I believe that that is the sort of consideration that Mr. Diedrich was doing with respect to this property. He had only been out there a couple months before, did his analysis, had the request from the Averys for the $150,000. That's what State Farm had it insured for, so that seemed reasonable to do that. I believe it was that kind of query that I think you're raising in your question that entered his mind when suddenly there was a demand, if you will, to raise it $100,000.
What was there, opposing counsel, I think, was asked the same question. There was a contingency here, at least as I see it. And that was that the Averys were to get back to the Diedrichs on the increase.
That's correct.
And that was an understanding, and I read part of the deposition, that both the Averys and Diedrich understood. Does that change this, quote, agency relationship at all?
I think it continues whatever relationship they had. It continues in the interim, the Averys, who were the proponents of the increase, have accepted the duty to go out and do whatever they
want. Well, I guess what I'm saying, hypothetically, let's say 2 months or 3 months passed and Diedrich didn't hear, did he have a duty to correspond and say, you know, I know you wanted the 250, I haven't heard from anybody, it's still 150, was there anything?
There was nothing in this agreement, and quite frankly, I don't think there would have been a duty for Mr. Diedrich to do that, because for all he would have known, the Averys went home that day and decided, you know what, we're not going to go back to Diedrich on this, and we're going to go down the street and purchase insurance for $250,000 from somebody else.
Which they could have done.
They could have done.
And then send, that's the way you do it. You'd first put insurance on, then say, I don't want your $150 anymore.
You put in a change request, and you take Mark Nelson off that account, and you put your new agent on. Yes, that's how it works.
Mr. Nelson, Mr. Diedrich, when I think of an insurance agent, I'll use my own as an example. I won't say what company is with. When I think of my insurance agent, I have an agent who's been with a company for years. He's been my agent for years. Every time we get a case up here that deals with insurance law, I call them up and tell them to increase my coverage. And that's basically how we work together.
Before or after we decide?
Yeah. All right. What I'm hearing in the facts of this case, it reminds me of the situation when I purchased my first home and I was looking for financing. And I went through a financing broker who went out and shopped different financing companies to get me the best insurance rate. Finance rate. As I understand Mr. Diedrich's role in this case, it sounds to me like he is more of a broker who shops from companies to companies and gets insurance maybe today from State Farm or from American Family or from somewhere else, as opposed to the type of traditional insurance agent that I think of that works for State Farm or American Family or such and such. If that is in fact the case, does that make a difference? Is there a distinction between a broker and an agent?
Certainly.
And are we dealing with a broker first and then is...
We're not dealing with a broker here. We're dealing with an insurance agent. I believe what your Justice is categorizing here is that some insurance agents are captive and they represent only State Farm, only American Family. They are...
Employees
of that insurance company, and they can only write for those insurance companies. That's not the case with Mr. Diedrich. As just an independent insurance agent, the nature of his business is such that when somebody comes in and he starts looking for coverage for that person, he's got a handful of companies that he can send out the requests for, the applications, if you will, to those companies, and then those companies have an opportunity to underwrite it and then to determine what the premium is going to be, and then that is generally submitted in a proposal. Maybe you're familiar with the proposals that you would get at a meeting, and they say, okay, here's five companies, this is going to be the cost, and what would your decision be?
Do you know the answer? And this is following up Justice Prosser's line of question. Do you know the answer to the question regarding insurance for autos? When does coverage bind?
That depends upon the authority of the insurance agent.
So if you, let's say if your agency had authority to bind coverage for policies of a certain amount, and you get a call, the agency gets a call, and liability limits are such and such. But I have a beater of a car, and I want collision much higher. I want it valued much higher than the beater value would be. How does that work in terms of if you're an agency that's authorized to bind coverage immediately upon request, and I request something that's on collision insurance a bit crazy? How does that work? Do you know, and does that have any relevance here?
I believe that Mr. Diedrich did have binding authority at his agency. And generally speaking, the authority that an insurance agent has is tightly wrapped up in the agreement between the insurance agent and the insurance agency. So what an insurance agent might be authorized to bind with Company A might have different rules with Company B. In your scenario, Justice, frequently they have the right to bind so that when you go out and buy your car, you can drive off the lot and it is covered because they bound it. But that may not be the final word on that. The application still has to be processed and the underwriting company or their underwriter at the company still has the ability to say
but
no.
From the moment of request, and agreement, I don't know. I think it's from the moment of request that you can, that many agents have authority to bind coverage. I call them after hours and leave a message on their answering machine and say, Bill, I just bought my daughter a used car, just got it home, need coverage on it. I think our case law is, in certain circumstances, that binds coverage and that there's liability.
That may be, Justice White. If you call an insurance agency now after dark, you will get a message and it will say to you,
we're not bound.
We are not bind. We cannot bind this coverage over the telephone.
Okay, well, I'm working on old law.
But with respect to the request, frequently from a practical standpoint, what the Justice is saying is correct, because I'm at the dealer ready to drive out, and so I make the phone call, I get an agent, I make the request, he says, okay, you're bound. Now, he's putting his reputation, if you will, on the line, because it's his authority to do that. And so if, in fact, it's your hypothetical, Justice, where you've got a beater and you're asking for policy coverage that is well beyond what it's worth, too many times like that, and that insurance agent's authority might actually be pulled.
I understand your opposing counsel to be suggesting then that even in a hypothetical where the agency has authority to bind coverage, and even if the agent thinks that the request is a bad, inappropriate, unsupportable request, that the ongoing relationship between the parties creates the duty to follow the request, even if it's a bad, dumb, stupid request. That's what I understand your opposing counsel to be arguing. Is my understanding consistent with yours, or do you...
I believe that's correct. I believe that what Mr. Avery is saying here is that it's the request that triggers it, and the insurance agent has no other duty.
As long as there's an ongoing agency. I mean, his options are terminate the agency or follow the directions. Love it or leave it.
And I believe that he's, quite frankly, they're trying to craft yet a different relationship. Going back to the jury instruction, we have the insurance agency one, we have the special relationship, and now we're creating the third one, which is an ongoing relationship that is not defined, and the Lenz case, quite frankly, speaks directly to that, where there was insurance put in place in 1985, and then the policy just remained in place till 1991, and that case specifically rejects that there is some sort of continuing, ongoing agreement, and therefore you must indeed do whatever I say that I tell you to do. So I believe that that position taken by Avery's is not warranted. I believe that the case law is quite clear with respect to whether or not we have to have an agreement with respect to whether or not we should purchase, or whether or not we need to get that insurance coverage. And quite frankly, I think that's good public policy because it preserves what we want insurance agents to do. We don't want them to be just robots taking applications and sending them in and not doing any kind of analysis. So I would urge this court to follow the well-reasoned Court of Appeals decision that sets out and follows the Wisconsin law. It preserves the right of the parties to continue to contract with whom they want. It preserves the right of the parties to make sure that they each have their respective duties, and it does not create a situation where an insurance agent, quite frankly, just has to do this one-sided thing, do it or else you have to move. This is insurance. It's ubiquitous. It's a product. They can go and get the product elsewhere if they so choose. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Davis.
Thank you. There was a question by one of the justices earlier about what are the duties of an insurance agent? And the answer, I think you can find in the jury instruction. And the duty is the agent must use the degree of care, skill, and judgment, which is usually exercised under the same and similar circumstances by insurance agents licensed to sell insurance in Wisconsin. While there is no duty to advise the policyholder of coverage is available, the agent must use reasonable skill and diligence to put into effect the insurance coverage requested by his or her policyholder. That's the duty. The Nelson and Meyer line of cases have all said there's no duty to advise about a coverage. There's no duty to advise about the existence of certain coverages. There's no duty to monitor what coverages are in place and call them up and say, maybe you should have more. It's been 10 or 15 years. There are none of those duties. The only duty is, and all those cases say, if they would have made a request, then we would have had to send the request up. But nobody made any requests in those cases, so there's no duty on the part of the agent. Well, here we have the request. The one duty that the agent truly has is to honor these requests, and that's what he didn't do here. The request was made.
It seems to me, and I need your help with this to correct me if I need correction, that you say that there's a duty to exercise ordinary care. The case laws does not encompass within the duty to exercise ordinary care the having to advise. But it seems to me you are superimposing something else upon the duty to exercise ordinary care, and that is the love it or leave it. You have a duty if you want to continue the relationship to
put what I asked for in place.
Yeah.
That's his job. That's the reason for an insurance agent's existence.
put my coverage into place that I'm asking for.
No.
And if you're not going to do it, then don't be my agent, and somebody else will do
in
it.
In that agency relationship, since we now know there were 9 or 10 properties, would the agent have been continuing for the other 9? Was that his decision? Or would your client then say, well, if you don't do this, I don't want you on the others? Who decides that?
Well, it's a two-sided relationship. If the agent does not want to represent the insured, the agent can withdraw and vice versa.
I'm withdrawing as your agent, how does the termination of insurance work? Tell me, because opposing counsel seemed to indicate that it was ubiquitous, it's continuing. When does one start and the other end, or one end and the other start?
Certainly under my scenario where the agent should have withdrawn, the agent still has the duty to do what it needs to do to protect the rights.
Would he have to then continue until the Avery's got new insurance?
I think so.
Well, how would that be? Because there's a set payment here, and he receives his so-called commission. I believe that was related to us. So it was in his interest, in Dietrich's interest, to have it $250 because he would have gotten more money. But say your position is correct and it's $150, then how long does that continue until they get insurance?
Yes. Yes. I'm withdrawing as your agent because I will not put that coverage into place. If you want it in place, find a different agent to do it. And when you do, then I will be off the – you'll have different insurance. You'll have a different insurance agent.
Do they have to send him the policy so he knows that they have insurance?
I think that he would be notified when the policy was canceled.
It brings up a lot of questions on how that – the mechanics of that would be done. And I was just thinking about his other agency. Does he have 9 different agencies or 10?
Properties?
No, they have 9.
Relationships?
They have, according to this, he has 10 different properties. Is that 10 different relationships?
Yes.
So he could have continued as an agent on properties 2 through 10, but they would have terminated it on this one?
Yes. Going back to the duties of the agent, and there was some question about why Dietrich was going out and examining the property. And based on the Meyer and Nelson line of cases, the only reason that he was out there, I think, was he was acting as any kind of duties he might have had to the insurance company to determine the value of the claim. Because there's no duty for him to advise the insured about what the value is.
Thank you.
And just to sum it up here, the Averys did what they're supposed to do. They determined their financial resources and the insurances that they needed. They asked for it. They didn't get it. The result was an underinsured property. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Davis, and thank you, Mr. Nelson, for your arguments on an insurance agent's duties. They've been very interesting and well stated. That concludes our hearing in 05-AP-1730, Avery versus Dietrich. The court is in recess until our next oral argument next week, and the court will meet in closed conference at 3:00.